Test. Thank you for talking to me.
No problem.
I think anyone who's not in love with you as a pro golfer is sort of got their head up their ass, don't you think?
Oh, I don't know. Like, I don't know about that. I mean, you know, everybody has their favorites, and you know, there's a statistic somewhere that 1 in 5 people will not like you, even if they've never met you. So, not everybody can like you.
That's an interesting stat. That sort of takes 20% off the table.
You obviously don't go on Twitter and Instagram then, do you not?
I don't do too much Twitter. I do a little more Instagram, but the thing that I would imagine put awe into anybody's thinking of you is just the simple quick stats. The three stats, right? 22 years of par player of the year, 5 continents with wins, 4 decades with wins. It's like, how does that just not fill everyone's heart with like a warm feeling?
That is nice, but I think it's more that, you know, this is my 28th year and people have watched me grow up out here and kind of bonded to me or not bonded to me. You know, they've either liked me or not liked me, but they've had a long time to see me and make a judgment on it and make their minds up, really.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, to the people that, you know, enjoy watching golf, they're going to know the stats of career wins and places I've won and things like that and how many Ryder Cups I've played in. But for people that don't watch golf and you just sort of say my name, people will come up with, he's never won a major and stuff like that. But, you know, golf career is about, you know, whilst they are highly judged on major championships, you know, that there's more to a career than that, isn't there? And, you know, I'm going into like a period of my career now where, you know, the longevity of it's becoming apparent to everybody. You know, playing at a high level of any sport takes a lot of doing and, you know, a lot of commitment and desire, really. Desire to do the stuff away from the golf course and golf tournaments that people don't see. You know, the hard work in the gym to keep yourself in shape because it gets harder as you get older. and that kind of stuff, really. The will to just keep on, you know, trying to improve. You know, I've got to 47 and I feel like I can still improve. I've been out on the range now and it balls for an hour and a half and I feel like I'm as good as I've ever hit it. So, you know, I'm playing, what, my 25th or 6th Dubai Desert Classic and, you know, I'm still turning up wanting to win it and feeling like I can win it if I keep hitting it like I am.
You said so many things there. Watch me grow up out here. What does that mean?
Well, get older for one thing. You know, when I came out here, I was 19 years of age, which, you know, I've got a son that age. So I look at him and he's just a baby compared to a 47-year-old playing golf out here. And, you know, just had 28 years of watching me kind of change and develop as a player and as a person.
What books are you reading? Do you read?
I don't read.
What do you do? What do you do when you're like, I just need me time, and not an activity. And I know you're into cycling, nothing like that. Like, are you into like art or anything creative beyond that?
No, not really. No, I'm not very creative. But I've always, you know, been a very sporty person. I played different sports as I was growing up, so I just like watching sport on TV and like any sport played, you know, watching it being played to the highest level, seeing people excelling in something.
Right. I don't know. There's something you could do audiobooks. There's a great cadence to your speech, and I thought maybe you would like read poetry or something.
Okay, maybe go into TV commentary.
There you go. Yeah. Is that interesting? Are you talking about that?
That's something I'd like to do in the future. Yeah,
I'd love that.
Yeah, I mean, I like listening to people on TV that have kind of played the game and done it to a higher level, so they can give the viewer an insight into what the player's thinking. You know, a viewer can watch that he's at a 7-9 through the green or he's thinned a bunker shot, but, you know, they want to know the little things that, you know, a player or a golfer might be going through or thinking about at a certain time over a certain shot, and that only comes from experience.
I do agree with you completely. I think one of the things that, as an amateur, I can learn is, like, course management. Like this is a good shot. They are not aiming at this flag, FYI.
Yeah.
That's always interesting.
Yeah. I mean, in years gone by, I'd Billy Foster caddy for me, and there'd be many a time when I'd hit a shot into a green and we'd be aiming for the left edge of the TV tower, and it'd come down bang on the left edge of the TV tower, 25 feet left of the hole if there was water on the right, and he'd say, hole in one. you know, because I did it exactly what he told me to hit it. And, you know, there's a lot of that in golf, you know, course management and playing to certain areas and strategic, you know, that is what course management is, using a strategy to get around a golf course, using your attributes, you know, the things you're good at, and trying to avoid the things that you aren't very good at.
So it seems like the theme there is almost like safety. Is that what it is? I mean,
there's certainly times out on a golf course where you need to be conservative. Yeah. And Seve was great at being aggressive at the right times when I watched him play. You know, some people have been too aggressive almost. You know, growing up, a hero of mine was Greg Norman, and people would argue that he was always aggressive, which, you know, cost him. He won a lot of tournaments because of that, and he ran away with tournaments because of that, won by a lot of shots. But he also lost tournaments because he was too aggressive at the wrong times. And you watch somebody like Bernard Langer go around a golf course. He plots his way around, very meticulous, and plays to certain areas. And I think Tiger's good at that as well. You know, he's obviously, whenever I played with Tiger, I didn't see any weaknesses in his game, but his mental strengths that you don't see, and the way he plotted his way around a golf course and made a 15-footer for par just to keep the momentum going, was something that, unless you kind of knew to look for that, weren't evident, but the, you know, you could see that they were always there.
Going back to the idea of growing up in the game, is that something that developed? How has your game changed, maybe from a strategy perspective, from emotional, from a, you know, the untangible part of your game?
Yeah.
How has that changed over your life?
Oh, emotionally, you know, I've gone through a lot, you know, in the 28 years of being out here. When you come out here, you know, you don't know what to expect. You haven't really got any expectations, which is a fantastic way to play golf. You just go out and hit it, find it and hit it again. You don't see any dangers out there. You haven't had any previous experiences, good or bad. The good ones, obviously, you can carry forward, but the bad ones you like to forget. But as the years go by, it's hard to forget, you know, the bad shots, where you might have 3-putter to lose a tournament and stuff like that. You carry them along. So, you know, emotionally and mentally, you know, I've experienced the highs and lows, been to world number 4, dropped to world number 300, and then moved back to world number 1. So, you know, yo-yoed up and down the world rankings and seen the sides there, and came out at 19 and just played in a golf tournament. Now 48, hosting golf tournaments and seeing all the stuff that goes into them. You know, I feel a lot more rounded as a person now.
What has done that? Because I look at your life, especially with the world, the life of traveling the world. Is it that? Is it just being alone on the grass, playing a game essentially against yourself?
It's definitely experiences. You know, I sit back now and I love the fact that I've played everywhere. You know, I won on the PGA Tour in 98, and it would have been very easy to just take my PGA Tour card and I've played the last 20 years on the PGA Tour, and that would have been fantastic, and it would have been, you know, an easy way to do it. But, you know, I played on the European Tour. I'm from England. I like being in England, so I didn't move over there. I like playing around the rest of the world, which has given me the experiences in Asia, in South Africa, in Australia. I played in South America, as well as playing, obviously, in Europe and the States. So, you know, I've had to make constant changes and be able to adapt and adapt quickly being out here. So I think that makes you more rounded as well.
Yeah, because it's interesting, you know, I kind of like the difference between the European Tour and the PGA Tour. It's basically one's in America and one's not, and one has more money than the other.
Mm-hmm.
Are there other differences?
Not really, no.
On the face of it, those are the differences. So,
yeah.
And so you and the other gentlemen that could play on the PGA Tour, who choose to play on the European Tour, what's the it's just because of the vibe?
I've been a member of both tours. I'm a member of both tours again now. I play predominantly in Europe, but I have got a card in the States. So I'll go over there. I'm going to go and play 6 events in 7 weeks coming up.
You're going to do Florida?
Yeah. And it's easier to get from tournament to tournament. There's less adjusting to do. You know, you can pretty much drive around the Florida swing. You only have to get on an aeroplane once. Whereas, you know, last week we're in Abu Dhabi, this week Dubai, then Saudi Arabia, all in the Middle East, but all very different. And then, you know, we'll be playing in Scotland on links courses at some point, and then in Germany on a parkland course. And, you know, it changes a lot. And, you know, I think, you know, somebody that came out and learned his game is Brooks Koepka, and he's obviously won 4 major championships, and I watch him and I watch his game, and he's really good at adapting to different things and adapting quickly. Rory's done the same. Rory started in Europe and then went to the PGA Tour. You know, he's high up there and he's good at adapting. He seems to play well wherever he goes. So I think if you play in Europe, certainly the start of your career gives you a lot of experiences and a lot of sometimes adversity that, you know, challenge you, and you have to think your way around it and find a solution to a lot of things.
You mentioned Scotland and links courses and you smiled. What was that?
Links golf's very different to anything else you would play. You know, we're playing here in Dubai this week. You wouldn't see a shot running into a green. We probably won't have to play in a 30-mile-an-hour wind.
Do you have a preference?
I wouldn't want to play links golf all the time. It's very difficult to keep your swing under control when it gets really windy. You know, you have to kind of manipulate the ball and play different shots, which can throw your swing out a little bit. Whereas if you're playing somewhere like Dubai, you know, it's more like golf as you would find on a driving range, where you're just kind of putting a swing on it.
It's almost like a simulator.
Yeah.
It's like there's constant wind.
Yeah.
The air is always the same temperature and humidity. And
yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah, links golf is, it's almost like you begin to expect the unexpected. And I think that's what makes it so enjoyable.
Hmm. Yeah, I think people enjoy playing the Open Championship, and people love watching the Open Championship because of the unpredictability of it all. I remember a few years ago playing at Muirfield. I think it was one that Ernie Els won. People went out early on the Saturday morning, having just made the cut, shot 4 under par, and then in the afternoon, because the weather conditions changed, it was virtually unplayable. I think Tiger shot one of his highest ever rounds in the Open Championship that afternoon and played his way out of it. And it brought the field together. So, you know, there's a lot of luck involved in links golf a lot of the time. You know, it's the draw can come into effect, and obviously the conditions can and weather conditions can come into effect. And I think people like that unpredictability.
Yeah. All right. So BetterHelp. Basically what we got is, in 2021, mental health is finally a thing. So many people are struggling right now and aren't feeling like their normal selves. Tell me about it. Therapy helps, and it doesn't have to leave you sitting around just talking about your feelings. Who wants to do that? So what is therapy exactly? It's whatever you want it to be. You can privately talk to someone if you feel like you're not dealing well with stress, or if you're having relationship issues. Whatever you need, it's time to stop being ashamed of normal human struggles and start feeling better, because you deserve to be happy. And now you don't have to worry about finding an in-person therapist near you to help. BetterHelp is customized online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist, so you don't even have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. It's much more affordable than in-person therapy, and you can start communicating with your therapist in under 48 hours. Join the millions of people who are seeing what therapy is really about. See if it's for you, because you are your greatest asset. I like that. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp, and the Eric Anders Lang Show listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/Anders. That's betterhelp.com/Anders. All right, folks, Precision Pro, proud sponsor of Random Golf Club, big fans of this crew. Precision Pro's mission is to help golfers feel confident with quality rangefinders at an affordable price. Well, mission accomplished, because they did it. They've been around for 7 years and were the first to introduce a sub-2-bill slope rangefinder. That's under $200. And now they're still the one and only company that offers lifetime free battery replacement services, which is honestly really rad. But they didn't stop there. They continue to innovate throughout the years, and their fourth generation rangefinder has all the features that golfers need to help them get to know their distances and improve the games. Because best of all, there's a Random Golf Club version. I actually want to offer, I went to their offices and sat down with their designer to create a rangefinder with the Random Golf Club flair to it. It's beautiful. Our listeners can receive an extra $20 off the Random Golf Club rangefinder or any of their laser rangefinders by using the code RGC20. That's RGC20. Swing with confidence, hit more greens with Precision Pro Golf.
You're in a small group in a lot of ways, and a lot of stats in your career. Maybe the smallest group is that your relationship with your caddy is unusual. Can we talk about that a little bit?
Yeah.
I'm so curious.
Yeah.
most caddies are kind of, you know, hanging out with a group of guys, having a cigarette and a beer as soon as the round's done. But your relationship with your caddy is very different.
Yeah, my fiance is my caddy, so future wife, I guess, if this pandemic had ever go away and we could get married. And
where would that be, if you don't mind?
Probably in England. Yeah. Well, who knows? It could be Las Vegas at this rate.
You mean Dubai?
Yeah.
Very similar.
Yeah. And it's just a relationship that works very well. You know, I've had those kind of caddies you were talking about, but I feel like I'm in a period in my life where, you know, Helen knows me better than anybody, and I need a psychologist out there a lot of the time to give me realities and things like that, and she's great at doing that, you know, bringing me back down to earth. Some caddies would be afraid to say the things that she says to me on the golf course.
How do you navigate the work? You're at work on the course, you're maybe emotionally unavailable, or maybe you need to be. What are the pros and cons, is basically?
Helen kind of tries to, you know, we're just going around another green field tomorrow morning. You know, it's like golf, you know, shouldn't mean as much to somebody as it does to a lot of the guys out here. You know, it's just a game at the end of the day. It's not life or death. You know, she uses that, the great line, did you die? you know, I'll make a bogey like that. I'll be walking, I'll be swearing at myself and that. And she'll go, yeah, but did you die? And it's like, no, I didn't die there, did I? You know, just make birdie on the next and let's get on with it.
I kind of love that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, you know, I'm at the age now where I need that. You know, I need a bit of a mental clip around the ear.
So, what was the genesis? How did it start?
It started under terrible circumstances, really. Billy Foster was caddying for me and his dad passed away, and Helen said, I'll do it. And you know, it was the first tournament of the year, it was 3 years ago, and it was in Abu Dhabi. So Helen came and caddied for me, and I did all my own yardages, and I ended up finishing seventh, I think, or eighth.
Interesting. Did you see a connection there?
I felt just really relaxed on the course that week, and because I'd done my own yardages, I had nobody else to blame.
And so when you say do your own yardages, you don't, there's a process that you need to do. Like, can you explain what do your own yardages actually means?
Because, well, you know, obviously measure how far I've got from my ball and hopefully the fairway to the pin, and take into account the wind and.
I see. So you have a yardage book from the past that you access, because, you know, you're not allowed a range finder. People listening, I just want to make sure everybody's aware. So you're using a sprinkler head or an object, and then you're just pacing it off.
Yeah. Yeah.
That might have been meditative.
It gives me something to think about while I'm kind of hovering around the golf ball. I don't get caught up with where the trouble might be.
Right.
Or, you know, it focuses me on the job in hand.
You're probably also like, you own it a little more.
That's exactly what it is. Even if I've made the wrong decision, it's better that I'm 100% committed to the wrong decision than 50% committed to what might be the right decision.
Whoa. I love that. Yeah. So anyway, that was 3 years ago, but she didn't.
No. Then
she didn't start on the bag full time.
Billy came back, and you know, we had a bit longer. And then there was another reason why he couldn't caddy for me, and I played in Denmark, and I lost in a playoff. So, you know, it felt like it worked again. And then myself and Billy decided to part ways. And the first week that Helen came, caddied for me, I won in South Africa at the Nedbank, which. Billy was one of the first ones to come across to me, and you know, he said you could have waited a bit longer than 1 week to win and win your biggest ever paycheck.
That's good. Yeah. That's great. And then you just were like, all right, let's do this. And what did she say? What did Helen say?
Yeah, love to. Yeah, obviously she can't do it week in, week out.
Oh really?
Helen's got a 10-year-old daughter from another marriage. I've got a nearly 20-year-old son and a 16-year-old daughter from my previous marriage. So we kind of have to juggle all those things. Sometimes my son caddies for me. Sometimes I get one of the other lads, you know, that's out here to caddy for me. So, you know, I can juggle it around. My trainer's caddying for me next week in Saudi Arabia. But because I'm doing all my own yardages and things like that, you know, I feel very comfortable, you know, having somebody like Steve caddy next week in Saudi Arabia, as long as he can make it round with the golf bag on his back, which if he doesn't, he'll never hear the end of it. then it all works pretty well. And, you know, having different people on the bag, they talk to me about different things, and, you know, the conversations out there are different, and it keeps me away from thinking about golf too much while I'm out there, if that makes any sense.
keeps me away from thinking about golf too much.
Yeah.
I love that. Well, what does that mean?
Just the wrong things, you know, letting my mind wander. And you know, it's very easy for the mind to get ahead of itself and think about different things, especially, you know, maybe if you're playing well and you start thinking about winning and, you know, there might be a day's golf to go. You don't even know where you're going to hit the next shot. So, you know, the different conversations out in the golf course very much keep me in the present with regards to what's going on with the golf.
You're a model of this, like, modern family.
Yeah, yes.
What do you think of that?
I don't think too much about it. You know, I'm in a good place in my life and, you know, everything works well. Yeah.
Maybe a few more questions on the, what was Helen's prior experience? There was no caddy experience. There was no. What is there anything in her life that brought her into that in a good way that was helpful?
I think she thinks about the mind a lot, and she's obviously strong and quite sporty, which helps when you're lugging that big heavy bag around a golf course. But, you know, I think she's quite a deep thinker, which helps when you're out on a golf course.
Are you're a deep thinker?
At times. I try not to be when I'm out on the golf course. I try to be very sort of dribbly.
Would you just like almost like a little drunk or something? Or like,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Interesting.
Just kind of glazed and just,
yeah,
not thinking about it too much. That's, yeah. You know, I suppose it's like being in the zone, really, isn't it? That they all talk about where, you know, you shoot a low score and you like get asked a question, what were you thinking about out there? And you, and 10 times out of 10, people say, I wasn't thinking about anything. You know, they were just in, and that's, you know, they were just in this place and that's exactly it. They weren't thinking about where their swing was or, you know, what they were going to do on the next hole or what they did 2 holes ago.
Yes, you really do kind of, if you're really engaged in it, you're not really thinking about
No.
it. You're just doing it.
Yeah.
Is there anything else like that in your life? I mean, is it cycling maybe?
No, not really. No, I find the cycling, you know, I have to concentrate. And like when I'm on the Peloton, which I use quite a lot, I find it a mental battle to, you know, I'll get to that point where, you know, I have to have a chat with myself to keep on going and work harder.
What is it? What's the chat like?
It normally involves swearing. In my own head,
because it's like I want to stop, or I don't want to hit this mark that the spin instructor is giving me, like, because they're saying 120 now and you're like, whoa, like,
yeah,
I'd rather do 100.
Yeah, no, I've always been very competitive, you know. My dad brought me up to be, you know, everything was a competition, so I've been competitive all through my life, and even when I'm on the Peloton, I'm always wanting to do better and better myself.
You brought up your dad. I heard the story about your grandparents were maybe the people that got you into golf.
They bought me my first set of golf clubs, which was a half set of ladies' clubs one Christmas when I was 12 years of age, which I put in the wardrobe. And, you know, I was into football, soccer and rugby and cricket and running. I was a good runner. And I was like, golf clubs, what do I want with them? And I put them in the back of a wardrobe and left them for 8 months. And then my dad taught me at school, taught me mathematics for 4 years in the end. And we had the same holidays, and he liked to go fishing and I hated fishing. So he said, right, go and get that set of golf clubs out the wardrobe and we'll go and have a game of golf at the local municipal. And that's where I started playing.
And that was 12, or that was a couple of years later?
I was about 13.
13, you first, yeah. First game.
Yeah, it was very quick. It was a very quick progression for me. You know, 13, I started playing. 14, I was like the area county champion in Nottinghamshire. 15, I won a national tournament. 16, I was playing for England boys. And then the year after, I got picked for England men. And then at 19, I went to the tour school and I was playing on tour. So from starting at 13 to 19, from starting to getting on tour. Which is fairly fast.
That's insane.
Yeah.
At what point are you like starting to look at, I'm guessing, Norman at the time or Gary Player or?
It would have been like the golden generation of European golf, really. Faldo, Lyle, Langer, Ballesteros, Alazabal, Woosnam. You know, a lot of good European golfers to choose from. But, you know, Greg Norman was one of the people that he was top of the list.
So,
you know, winning open championships and top of the world rankings, best player in the world. So
at what point are you, you're 13, and at what point do you look to those athletes and say, I think I'd like that?
Yeah, I really didn't like look at them and think that. I obviously worked very hard at my game and I got lessons straight away, so I didn't get into too many technical difficulties. You know, I had a good foundation because I had a good coach as a junior. And then it was like, I've won the county championship. Oh, yeah, I've got picked for England, so I'm in the top 12 in the country. And then I kind of got to 16. I was like, well, you know, maybe I'd like to do something in golf, whether it be, you know, being a professional on tour or, you know, working in a pro shop, you know, giving lessons or something like that. Just wanted to be involved in golf. And then it just progressed really quickly. And I think it all happened so fast, I didn't really have time to think about it too much.
I guess the best things do, right? You don't control. You don't even really plan.
No.
How can you plan?
Goes back to being young and not having any expectations, really, doesn't it? You don't set any bar for yourself. You know, it's not like I stood on the range at 15, 16 years of age and said I want to be the best player in the world. You know, I didn't really set any kind of, you don't dream that high, do you, sometimes? And, you know, you just go out every day and just try and be better every day.
So would you say that it sounds like, from what I'm hearing, you're not really a goal-oriented guy, but more of a process-oriented person?
I'm very much process, yeah. Not goal. I don't set goals anymore. When you think about golf, we don't win very often. I've played somewhere in the region of probably 800 or 900 tournaments, and I've got 44 wins, which is a lot of wins in a golfer's career.
It's a lot.
But it's not a lot of wins to percentage of tournaments played, is it? You know, it's like 5% of the time. 5%. I might have won. So, and that's a lot for a golfer. So,
but I guess what if you categorize a win as a top 10?
Well, this is
what's
the thing.
A win? What is a win, Lee Westwood?
Are any of the guys walking up and down this range setting a goal of finishing top 10 this week? You know, they'll be setting
some.
Possibly.
Pepperell said it. Who said it? They were like, they pay a lot. Kisner. Right. They pay a lot for 7 plays.
Yeah, 20. Yeah. Well, they do.
I mean, that's a good amount of money. But it's not about the money.
Yeah, but 20 people might play better than him that week, and he might finish 21st, even if he's played his best golf possible. So, you know, I go out there and just try 100% on every shot. You know, be into every shot. You know, don't let anything else distract me. Commit to every shot, and then whatever happens from there happens. You couldn't say I win in total this week. You couldn't say I'm going to win this week. I'm going to shoot 22 under, and I'm going to win. Because somebody might shoot 23 under.
Brooks Koepka tried that.
Yeah. So, you know, it's there's so many variables and unpredictable things in golf that very difficult to set goals. And goals have got to be achievable as well. Else if you don't ever achieve your goals, you're constantly getting knocked, aren't you? You're always getting pushed back. Goals are there, you know, to achieve and give you a boost and move you forward.
Who or what taught you the most about golf?
Experiences have taught me the most about golf. Yeah, going through it. Yeah. You know, moving up the world rankings and then dropping right down the world rankings, living through that and figuring that out and realizing that at the end of the day, it's me as an individual that's got to have faith in my own thoughts and kind of trust yourself more. You're the one out there trying to a 3-wood into the last tier with a 1-shot lead, aren't you? Nobody else can tell you how to do that. Nobody else can tell you what you're feeling over the golf ball. You know, and everybody thinks differently. So it's about knowing yourself really well and knowing what makes, say, Lee Westwood tick and what makes me get the most out of myself.
What's the title of your autobiography going to be?
Probably what it said on my school reports, could have done better.
Oh, come on.
Could have tried better. Could have tried harder, most of them said. I was one of those people that stared out the window, watching the clouds, waiting for a time where I could walk out and go on the golf course and hit balls. Don't tell my kids that, though.
But you're a happy person.
Yeah, very, yeah.
What makes you so happy?
I'm just very comfortable in the life that I've got right now. You know, there's nothing that I miss.
There's nothing you want.
No.
If you could have anything right now that you don't have, what is it?
No, there isn't anything.
What's on your bucket list outside of golf? What do you want to do that you haven't done yet outside of golf?
I've done a lot of things, but you know, there's stuff on there. Most would involve sporting events or traveling to places that I've not been to. And
where do you want to travel to?
I'd like to see the Greek islands, do a bit of that.
I knew you were going to say Greece.
Yeah,
I really did.
There you go.
Why you haven't
never
been there?
No.
Yeah. What do you need? You want me to go faster? You want me to shut up? What? All right. The handlers are telling us to wrap. Any questions for me, Lee?
No, not really. No, no.
That's kind of a joke.
Are you all right?
I'm great.
Good.
I'm really grateful for your time.
Good.
And you're very pleasant to talk to.
Thanks.
And I really appreciate it. And you know, I've been a fan for a long time. I don't know if you remember this, but you definitely don't. But at the Tour Championship about 8 years ago, maybe nine, I interviewed you, and I was holding the mic, and I had the camera, and I got a photo of you and my brother, because he works for UPS.
Okay.
And he got us tickets to the Tour Championship when at Eastlake normally, you know. And that was like one of my first interviews I ever did,
right,
with a pro golfer.
Right.
So now we're here, and I'm really just.
And I didn't chew you up or anything like that. No.
Well, you didn't cheer me up.
No, I didn't chew you up.
No.
Give you a hard time or anything.
You were very kind.
And good.
And why would you? Well, you're a very kind person.
Well, yeah, everybody has off days, don't they?
No.
But I try and be nice and thoughtful with answers whenever I'm doing anything.
Like no, that. I came up to you on the 18th green, now the 9th, the long par 3.
Yeah.
And you were about to go into the tunnel and go, and I said, "Can I leave, Mr. Westbrook? Can I ask you a few questions?" And I was asking you about if golf is a spiritual game or not. Well, I appreciate your time again.
Thanks.
So thank you. And I wish you the best this
Cheers.
Week. And I'm looking forward to seeing more of you and Helen, and just the story is so interesting to me. And I think golf benefits from that story.
Thank you.
And I hope that continues.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Cheers.